Hello and welcome to the July IASB Update podcast. My name is Claire Short and I am part of the communications team at the IFRS Foundation. Today I am joined by Andreas Barkov and Sue Lloyd, Chair and Vice Chair of the IASB respectively. This is of course our first episode with Andreas and we'll be getting to hear his thoughts on his new position towards the end of the episode. But first, let's look at some of the key topics discussed at the board meeting held on the 20th and 21st of July. There are two post-implementation reviews on the current work plan. One relates to IFRS 10, 11, and 12, and the other relates to IFRS 9, which is, of course, the financial instrument standard. Andreas, in your interview on our website earlier in July, you said that IFRS 9 was indeed your favorite standard. So let's come to you for that project first. What did the board hear in terms of an update this month?
Thank you, Claire, and a warm welcome to everyone listening. And thank you also for passing the IFRS 9 slot to me. Having spent most of my career on anything that is related to financial instruments, this project has my full attention, of course. That said, I need to be careful of what I'm saying, though, as Sue had been in charge of the project at the time. The post-implementation review is focusing specifically on the classification and measurement requirements in IFRS 9. Other topics not related to classification and measurement, including the provisions on expected credit losses in hedge accounting, will be addressed at a later date. This month, the board heard a summary of feedback gathered by the project team in the first phase of outreach, the aim of which was to determine the topics that will be included in the subsequent request for information. As such, topics covered in the forthcoming request for information will include the assessment of contractual cash flows for financial assets, the so-called SPPI test, and consider contractually linked instruments, as well as new product features that did not exist when the standard was developed. The option for equity instruments to present changes in fair value and OCI, and modifications to contractual cash flows, amongst others. The board aims to publish this request for information towards the end of this quarter. If you have comments relating to the effectiveness and performance of the classification and measurement requirements of IFRS 9, including but not limited to the topics I just mentioned, please read and respond to the RFI once it is out for consultation.
Thank you, Andreas. Sue, turning to you, can you fill us in on what the board heard in terms of the post-implementation review of IFRS 10, 11, and 12, those being the standards related to consolidated financial statements, joint arrangements, and disclosure of interests in other equities, respectively?
Sure. So this post-implementation review, or PIR, is sort of at a different stage to the PIR of IFRS 9 that Andreas was just talking about, which is going to be open for comment later this year. So on this consolidation suite of standards, 10, 11 and 12, the comment period for the request for information are closed in May. And so this month we heard a summary of the feedback that we've received through that process. Now, importantly for me, despite concerns that were raised shortly after these standards were issued, it appears that most of these concerns aren't coming up anymore. And I think that's really important for us just as a general piece of information, because it's sort of reinforcing this idea that the timing of post-implementation reviews are perhaps good when there's been enough time for our stakeholders to have enough time to really get their heads around new requirements and for practice to develop. And we're getting the benefit of that. When we initiated this post-implementation review, things had sort of really settled down, and it's really the major things that are coming through. So the staff took us through the key findings, and that included the fact that many stakeholders said that the standards are working as intended and that there's support for the main principles in these standards. Most stakeholders said that the disclosure requirements in IFRS 12 are a significant improvement to financial reporting, so that's great. But we did hear some suggestions for areas in these standards where it might be helpful for there to be some additional examples or guidance to aid application. And the board has really asked the staff to go away and look at this a little bit more closely and really to see if we can sort of hone in on areas where further explanation of some of the requirements could really add to an understanding of some of the key concepts in these standards to assist people when they're applying judgment. If you're interested in the detail of what we heard, you can find this information on our website, and our next step will be to decide how to respond to the feedback, which we'll do at a future meeting.
Thank you, Sue. Andreas, coming back to you, The primary financial statements project has been on the agenda for the past few months, and the board has been looking at stakeholder feedback that came in during last year's consultation, specifically looking at whether to change its preliminary views based on this feedback. What did the board discuss this month?
Our listeners will recall that the exposure draft, amongst other issues, contained proposals related to classifying income and expenses across three main categories, being operating, financing, and investing. The board has already made several decisions regarding their preliminary views, and listeners can find out more about these in previous episodes of the podcast or by looking at the project updates on ifrs.org. In May, the board had tentatively decided on a new approach for classifying items of income and expense arising from liabilities in the financing category of the statement of profit or loss. This month, we discussed the robustness of that new approach by looking at hybrid contracts with embedded derivatives, at gains and losses on derivatives and hedging instruments, as well as the classification of foreign exchange differences. Having listened to and taken into account the feedback from stakeholders, the board was largely in agreement with the staff's proposals, with most decisions taken unanimously. For instance, the board confirmed that all income and expenses arising from transactions that involve only the raising of finance and specified income and expenses from other liabilities be classified in the financing category. In this context, the board agreed to specify the meaning of transactions that involve only the raising of finance, which is, broadly speaking, when the company receives cash when it borrows rather than, for example, buying a truck and getting vendor financing and repays the financing in cash or its own shares. The board also agreed on the classification of income and expenses on hybrid liabilities with embedded derivatives, so one of my classic, back to your primary question on IFRS 9. The board further agreed that foreign exchange gains or losses be classified in the same manner as the underlying transaction that gave rise to these gains or losses, unless doing so would involve undue cost and effort, in which case the exchange differences would be classified in the operating category. The details of these and other changes can be found in the ISB update on our website. More generally, the board will continue discussing their preliminary views at future meetings.
Thank you, Andreas. Turning to maintenance and consistent application, what did the board hear this month? Sue, let's come to you.
So this month, the board finalised the proposed amendments, the transition requirements and the comment period length for the work we're doing on supplier finance arrangements and the classification of debt as current or non-current. Two board members have indicated an intention to dissent from the proposals on current, non-current classification. I think importantly, they agree with the proposed changes in how the actual classification occurs and the disclosures, but they have a different view on some of the proposals for separate presentation that are part of these proposals. So look out for that in the exposure draft. And the board agreed that all the due process requirements have been met on these projects and gave permission for the development and submission for approval of an exposure draft. So that was wrapping some things up, ready for publication. And we also heard that the Interpretations Committee had published some tentative agenda decisions for comment, so tentatively deciding that standard setting isn't required. And these were on two questions. One was about a specific type of funding being provided to banks in Europe by the European Central Bank, targeted longer-term refinancing transactions, and a question about the leasing standard and a question specifically how to think about economic benefits from use of a wind farm. So for those interested in those topics, those agenda decisions are open for comment until the 16th of August. So please let us know what you think.
Staying with you, Sue, can you tell us what the board heard in terms of goodwill and impairment?
Yeah, so for the past few months, the board has heard and discussed the feedback we've had from our stakeholders on our recent consultation on goodwill and impairment. And last month, we began to re-deliberate and discuss any changes to our preliminary views. At this meeting, we continued our re-deliberations on disclosures about business combinations and their subsequent performance, about the effectiveness of the impairment test, including any sort of possible adjustments or substitutes for that, and the subsequent accounting for goodwill. So I think the main takeaway for me was that in the course of our debate, it became evident that for our board, these topics are very much linked and they form a package. So you can't really look at one of these questions without looking at the others. They need to be considered altogether. Regarding the disclosures, the board was informed about the feedback that we got on our preliminary views. I think the good news was that the usefulness of the proposed disclosures was largely acknowledged, and in particular, there was strong support for these proposals from investors. But there were concerns raised, particularly by preparers, about being required to potentially provide what they would see as commercially sensitive information and what might be forward-looking information. I think our staff did a really good job in analysing the feedback. It's quite specific and the context is important. And so I really recommend that if you're interested in this, look at the agenda papers for this topic, which are, again, on our website. Concerning the impairment test, there seemed to be general agreement from our stakeholders that there is no new methodology that could really be introduced without fundamentally changing our impairment of assets standard, IAS 36. And we could do improvements on the fringes, and we'll look at those at a future meeting. And then when it comes to the sort of million-dollar question, whether to reintroduce amortisation of goodwill or not, the board acknowledged that stakeholder views remain divided on this question. Some movement in views has been surfaced, but still very diverse opinions. But again, the board re-emphasised the importance of not looking at this in isolation, but as part of a package, particularly with the disclosures. So we didn't make any decisions at this meeting. It was very much highlighting the areas that we're interested in looking at more closely ahead of our joint FASB IASB meeting, which was held on the 23rd of this month. And before we get onto that joint meeting, Claire, if I could, just the topic of disclosures reminds me of one other thing that we talked about at the meeting in July. And that's just to let people know that the exposure draft that we have out at the moment on disclosure requirements in IFRS standards as part of our targeted standards level review of disclosures has had the comment deadline extended to the 12th of January 2022. That means that we've ended up with a very long comment period overall on this project. And there was quite a debate at the board table about the appropriateness of that. On balance, I think everybody agreed that it was appropriate because we're very interested in particular to get feedback from the field work on this topic. And we know we're introducing some quite new important ideas, and we really want to understand people's thoughts on that, including the enforceability aspects. So a long comment period, but really the board emphasised that this should be seen as being really a one-off. It's because of the unique nature of and the significant new thinking in the proposals to enable preparers to get enough time to do the field work and really to give us detailed feedback on the practical application of the proposals. So I guess that's a nice way of saying to people listening, don't expect this to be the sort of normal comment period that you'll see on our exposure drafts going forward.
Thank you, Sue. Let's turn back to the joint education session that you briefly mentioned at the end of the goodwill piece there. Around once a year, the IASB and the FASB hold a joint education session. Andreas, can you fill us in on the highlights from the most recent session?
Sure, Claire. It may be helpful for our listeners to emphasize that the meetings are educational in nature, as you say, so we don't take any decisions. Of course, our staff and individual board members talk regularly to each other, yet the education meetings provide an opportunity for all members of the two boards to share insights and views and to ask questions and provide comments. The purpose of these meetings is to discuss subjects of mutual interest to the two boards. The most obvious reason being that we have a converged standard in place that we want to try hard to remain converged. Another reason could be that both boards have individually obtained evidence from stakeholders that a particular issue may need being addressed. Our respective projects and supplier finance arrangements that Sue has just talked about are a good example of that. The boards were also informed about the status and the content of their respective agenda consultations. Both boards are currently consulting their stakeholders, and comments on either consultation are due by around the end of September. The purpose of this agenda item was to generally inform each other of high-level feedback already obtained. Then the final item was devoted to our respective goodwill projects. We looked closely at the feedback both boards had received to their consultations relating to goodwill and impairment, as well as the scope, objective, and status quo of the respective projects. It is far too early to conclude on positions, but it was my sense that FASB colleagues appreciated our views on why our board thinks that robust and relevant disclosures should be part of the package. It was a good and informative meeting, and we will certainly be catching up on all the issues discussed at this meeting, and really, I hope, in person again.
Thank you, Andreas. That concludes our discussions from the July board meeting, which was, of course, your first meeting as IASB chair. Andreas, how do you feel you're settling in?
Pretty well, actually. While chairing technical meetings is something I'm quite used to, it is always nice to see that what you've learned over the years does work in another setting too. That said, I want to pay tribute to my fellow board members who were all fully engaged and actively weighing in. I was very pleased with the level of interaction, and if that was the sign for the meetings to come, I'm very much looking forward to them.
Speaking of looking ahead, what are you most excited about working on? Any specific projects or standards?
No, I don't think that I have a particular project or standard that stands out. I'm pretty much interested in everything we have on our plate, and I'm particularly thankful to be able to look at the technical side of things again. Of course, there are projects that I have had less exposure to given my previous constituency, such as the IFRS for SMEs or regulated activities, but this does not impact my interest in them. Peeking ahead, I'm naturally curious about the outcome of our agenda consultation. Of the consultations that are open for comment, this one is of particular importance as it will inform us about where our stakeholders would want us to spend our resources on over the next 5 years. The feedback we have heard so far suggests interesting times to come, so stay tuned.
And anything else you'd like to share with our listeners today, Andreas?
Well, I would really like to thank all of those that have sent personal notes and messages upon the start of my tenure. They really make me feel welcomed. We will now give everyone a bit of a rest as we will pause our regular monthly meetings during August. I wish everyone a well-deserved break. Do get your batteries recharged and stay well. I look forward to speaking to you again in September.
Thank you, Andreas, and I look forward to working with you on these podcasts in particular. Before we wrap up, it's worth mentioning that the IASB published an exposure draft late in July. It proposes a new IFRS standard that would permit eligible subsidiaries to apply IFRS standards with a reduced set of disclosure requirements. The consultation is open until the end of January next year, and you can find all the information you need under the work plan section of ifrs.org. We've also published the exposure draft proposing narrow scope amendments to IFRS 17, specifically to help with transition to the standard. You can find information on that on our website too. Finally, just a reminder, as Andreas mentioned, there will be no board meeting for the month of August and therefore no podcast either, but please tune in again in September. Thank you to both Sue and Andreas for joining me today. And until we come back in September, you can catch up on old episodes of our podcast on our YouTube channel, Spotify, or your preferred podcast player. And if you have any comments on this podcast, please email communications@ifrs.org. Until next time, keep well.